Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah! Podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey! Gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints talk from our studios at Meat House Fork. Today, we're going to talk about New Orleans Saints' big victory, and I mean it is big. The Saints are now 3-2, and I think it's huge relative to being 2-3 going into the bye week. With me today, Heath Elson-San and Wesley Coleman. So grab a drink, sit back, relax, because for the next hour or so, we'll be doing New Orleans Saints football, BS and beer style.
Hey, folks. All right, listen. I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay? And it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing. And if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop, okay? Just stop doing what you're doing.
Gentlemen, welcome. Heath, how are you today?
I'm good, Dave.
You know what? I got to tell you, I hear other people do that, and I felt like, am I supposed to? But does anybody really care how you doing?
Not really.
Wesley, does anybody care how Wesley's doing? They tune in just to hear us talk a little sports. So how you doing? I don't care how you doing, really. So anyway, let's just talk some football. The first thing that I want to talk about, I guess I'll start off with what I said early or just moments ago, was 3-2 as opposed to 2-3. That Giants game, man, we're going to regret that all season. I don't think that's lost upon anybody, but Heath, the importance of going into the bye week with a winning record where we get or should. Now, that's another question we're going to have because I think I'm going into this bye week just assuming everybody's coming back except for Onyemata. Yeah, they're all coming back. Yeah. And that gives me the feeling of like we hung on. We grinded. We got to 3-2 and our first team's coming back. Preseason's over.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I heard that a lot. That was kind of the mantra heading into this is with the amount of people we were going to be missing. Well, if we can get through those first five games at 3-2, we'll have done good. But I've also saw a statistic of the difference between teams that start 3-2 and 2-3. It's a huge statistical difference in making the playoffs. Now, of course, that'll change a little bit this year by potentially by adding the 17th game. So it's not exactly apples to apples, but it's a, you know, I want to say 2-3, it drops down into the 20s, the 20 something percent chance of making the playoffs, which you wouldn't necessarily think it would be that dramatic, but apparently it is. So, yeah, the Giants game is going to be that one that got away. You know, really, there was no good reason for the Saints to have lost that game. And I would love to be at 4-1 right now, but I'll take the 3-2. And you know, you said it, you know, Onyemata's got one more game he has to sit out. And I guess we'll get into this at some point, but the kicking carousel, maybe Lutz too. I'm not so sure that Lutz is coming back either. And I know Wesley might have a different opinion on that, but
I'm a little pessimistic about it just based on the fact that we went out and signed another kicker. Wesley, I'm not one to try to remember these knuckleheads' names. I mean, he probably won't be on the roster. We had a guy. See, this is where the benefit of not bothering to learn these guys' names. The last kicker lasted 1 week, and he's already gone. So
this guy's got to be there for three games now because they signed him off of somebody's practice squad. So
okay, so he gets 3 weeks on the regular roster.
Three games, yeah, not just weeks.
Right,
so
right.
It won't count this bye week. Three actual games he has to stay on the active roster.
So that's got to tell you something. Well, although Wesley and you could tell us a little bit because I know you know all the details about this guy. We got him off Chicago's practice squad, but I heard people say, because of the way that the rosters are now set up, you have extra inactives, that the roster spot, and this was all predicated by the whole McCoy thing. Like, well, McCoy will be back within 3 weeks because why else would they not put him on IR? And then he's not. And they said the roster spots aren't quite as valuable as they used to be, so they're willing to take a little bit more of a chance keeping an extra guy on the roster. So, I mean, are we going to end up with this kicker on the roster for 3 weeks? Well, it looks like we have to.
Yeah. So Brian Johnson, like, you know, that's the name of this kicker.
Keep going. I don't care about that.
So, he's got to be on the roster for 3 weeks. I'm not going to be surprised if he comes in play or three games. Not going to be surprised if he plays one game, and then we've already worked out with him that if Lutz comes back early, there's an injury settlement in your future of once you are put on the IR for the rest of the year, then we don't have to have you on for three games. Or, I mean, so we saw Lutz kicking a little bit a month ago. So we know he's been working out. So one of two things, either they're going to be tricky like that, or there's something going on with Lutz. So they're just being extra precautionary because they're seeing exactly how important the kicker is. And the last thing we can do is not have Lutz for the playoffs. They'd rather miss him for three more games of the regular
season. And I'd agree with that. Yeah.
Have any chance of him coming back too early.
Just what we've seen over the last, the beginning of the season, you cannot go into the home stretch and playoffs with that.
Is it the one thing in the entire world that there's only 24 people in the world that can do? I mean, because there's not 32. There's not 32 people that can consistently kick field goals under 40 yards.
But I watch college football, and they're teams that they can make extra points. I mean, what is it about you? You know,
I don't know, but who knew that the NFL knew what they were doing when they moved the extra point back, that it would wind up being that big of a difference between.
I love it. I mean, like when they suggested this, I'm like, man, they should do something more than this because.
I remember thinking it's like, man, these guys are automatic from 30 yards away. Well, not exactly.
Yeah.
And the thing y'all started harping on at the beginning is the 3-2. Listen, it's time to get over the moving forward after the bye. Stop with the excuse and stuff. For us to be 3-2 for all the things that have gone wrong, whether it's injuries, suspensions, surgeries that should have happened a year earlier, the hurricane, displaced this, all those home games in Jacksonville. Coaches being out, all of that stuff is now over. So there's no more excuses. Like I do not want to be in 4 weeks having this conversation going, well, you know, it's a good thing that we're 5-4 because, you know, all this has happened. No, the 3-2 is that we can be positive and blow sunshine up each other's butts about, you know, 3-2. But now it's time for all of those reasons. I mean, there's not going to be another hurricane. Hopefully there's, hopefully not going to be more suspensions and injuries. It's time. I think that it'll always be, I can't imagine out of 23 players that are starters, including Lutz, so 11 on offense, 11 on defense, and then one special teamer, missing 8 or 9 starters is unreal. And I think that any team being close to 500 or above 500, missing 1/3 of your starters is crazy, but that's over. Like, let's start moving forward with, this team has to get better. The offense has to be able to move the ball, and we need to start.
Well, here's another angle to that, you know, it is true. Like, injuries are part of the game. It's a game of attrition. You got to have depth. You got to have backups that can step in and play. And we've seen that we've been able to maintain a decent level or a good level it just depends on how you define it. But the point is we've been able to maintain a level that allows us to have a winning record and probably should be 4-1 right now. The problem with all these, I feel like the Saints went into the season with most of these problems. Now we're starting to see other teams, injuries are piling up, man. It's like every Sunday, it's like, oh my God, this guy's out, that guy's out. And what I'm starting to see is that now we have, is it fair to say, that we've learned to play with what we have. We've gotten young guys that got some experience, and now all of a sudden these other teams have to learn how to play without the stars. So I do think that there's some type, one, an advantage, because it just shows that as a team, coaching, everything, players, we have a better, you know, a much better than average team. Then when we get our starters back, we should only be better than that.
Yeah, and the bigger thing too, if we're going back even further, this is a team that should have no depth because we just cut $100 million in payroll. And so everybody's like, okay, well, the Saints starters are going to be good, but all the depth is completely gone from the roster now. And so you're right, Dave, for us to be able to absorb this early in the season, we're a third of the way through the season now, which is crazy to think about.
Right.
It seems like it just started, but we're a third of the way through the season. We've absorbed all these things. We figured these out in the offseason. These other teams are having to figure it out on the fly after everybody has all their rosters put together, and they're truly going to be putting practice squad players in starting lineups where we've kind of, we figured that out. We kind of got to pick the best of the guys earlier than everybody else as far as the backups.
Heath, so the Saints, they have an advantage by the fact that they weathered the storm early. Now, here's the other thing. I hear people saying, well, once we get these players back, well, what they're not considering is like, yeah, Armstead comes back and then Ramczyk's going to bang up his knee or his shoulder. You know, to think that once these guys come back, nobody's going to get injured, just not true. But you got to hope or you got to believe that you're not going to get eight starters. I would argue with you that eight of the top 12 most important players on the team are out. And so we found a way to overcome it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I mean, you're right. There's always going to be injuries, but this is an unusual amount to have at one time of the quality of the players. You know what I mean? And so, you know, let's knock on wood and keep your fingers crossed and everything that doesn't continue. But look, the Saints under Sean Payton, you know, when you really think about it, I mean, that's a credit to how good of a coach and a system that the Saints have. We've always been able, you know, we've been able to weather not having great wide receivers, right? Large part due to Drew Brees' ability as quarterback. But then you take Drew Brees out 2 years in a row, and over that combined eight games or however many, what would we go like? Teddy Bridgewater was what, 5-0 or
5-0, and Taysom and then, was 3-1.
Yeah, so 8-1 without Drew Brees. Somehow this team managed to, you know, so the Saints kind of have a thing about doing that. You know, now unfortunately we've hit, you know, some of those seasons we might finish 7-9, not necessarily that great, but no worse than that, right? I mean, you know, so the floor is somewhere around 500, even with the worst case scenarios happening. So yeah, you know. Look, we just need to get these guys back, and we need some of them to stay healthy. And, you know, it's funny you brought up Ramczyk. You know, when Armstead comes up, Ramczyk hasn't been Ramczyk. And, I watched some replays earlier, man, and there were a couple of plays. It was just like we probably need to spend some time talking about Ramczyk because he's starting to worry me.
I've heard that, you know, and honestly, when I go and I take a look at, you know, listen, I don't have the time to – dedicate to eating as much tape as I used to. And so I kind of select things that I want. Like we might get in an argument or, you know, a debate about a player and I start paying attention to him. I don't pay attention to Ramczyk because I just assume he's doing a good job, but I've noticed a few flashes. One of the things, and I'll tie this into, and we'll get Wesley's input on this, is I keep hearing that because a guy who had a great game is Lattimore. And I keep hearing people say, well, that's, you know, we paid him and that's what you want. And then I start thinking, you know, I don't think when you pay a guy at the beginning of the season that and he has a good season, that's an okay. Because I don't think guys just say, I got paid, I'm going to quit playing. What it is the offseason that you have to worry about after the season's over and the guy goes home and now he got a whole bunch of money in his pocket and fame and everything that, and then he starts, well, I don't need to work out as much and your attitude kind of changes. That to me is when you have to worry about. But now Lattimore obviously having a great season after getting paid so far. And then on the other hand, we're starting to see little problems with Ramczyk. Now, could that be that he's, you know, having a cover for, I want to say Brock Morton, but it's Throckmorton. And so, you know, Wesley, I mean, what are your thoughts? Is this something that's just like a blip on the screen or something we need to be concerned about?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm not so much worried about the offseason with the money in Lattimore's pocket. I'm worried about the gun in his pocket more yeah. than anything else.
Yes.
But the Ramczyk thing's been interesting. And I mean, Ramczyk is a guy we go back to that wanted to quit football a year before he was drafted.
Like, this is
a guy that did not want to play football his either junior or senior year and then got talked back into it or got remotivated. And now it's become one of the best players in the league and got paid like it. I don't think he's playing at a terrible level where it's time to go like, he doesn't give a crap. he's definitely agreed not playing like Ramchek. And I just assume that with the things we have going on, that he's probably dealing with some sort of injury like everybody, and he's right. fighting through it versus going on IR. And then we'd have an entire new offensive starting line instead of him. And I'll just say, I agree. He's allowing more pressures than I've ever seen out of him. He's also just not getting ran over. So it's an uncomfortable level of not up to his normal standards.
He does have a,
but he's not playing terrible. And I would say there's also, I mean, I assume that when Eric McCoy, who agreed is probably one of the better centers in the entire NFL, mm-hmm. if he's your center, your guard Ruiz isn't helping the center. He's over, you know, he can hit somebody out to Ramchek. Well, now Throckmorton's doing everything he can to worry about Throckmorton and probably helping Ruiz. And Ruiz, there's just a difference, I think, when you take away the level of player next to him.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that's not necessarily his first assignment, he's still got to worry about it. So I'm sure that it all adds up. And then also, yeah, maybe he's being lazy because he got paid a lot of money.
Well, we hope it's not. But Heath mentioned the arm brace, but that's been – he's had that a while, hasn't he?
I think he wore that last year too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of the things – now, okay, so I'm not doing a very good job of transitioning here, but so I'm just going to go ahead and throw out Winston, who is obviously – a huge issue, meaning maybe issue is the wrong word. He's somebody everybody's gonna have an eye on, you know. Is he the future? Like, my current position is like, I'm not gonna do it in four games or five games. I'm, you know, now look, if he's completely horrible or completely amazing, then yeah, I'd be like, no, I'm locked in, man. Get that guy signed or cut him. But he's done some great things statistically, 12 touchdowns and I'm pretty sure that's right, right? 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 108.2 quarterback rating, which is tied with Tom Brady, who, you know, I guess that wouldn't mean anything unless Tom Brady was having a great season, which he is. And so these things look great. But then, you know, if you actually watch the game, it's those stats can be a little bit misleading because he has times where he's inaccurate. He has times. But in my opinion, this is 2 weeks in a row where he hasn't done that's Tampa Bay's Jameis Winston. He hasn't done anything that just makes you say, God. Now, at first, he threw that interception. And that was that's old Jameis. He lobbed one, but he was getting stepped on when he threw the ball. And there's just sometimes you just got to accept that things happen. That's just football. Yeah. Heath, you have something to say?
Well, no, look, he definitely was somewhat affected on that throw. My problem with Jameis right now, look, I don't have a lot of problem with Jameis right now. I've been pretty happy with the way he's played for the most part, but he does have a tendency to overthrow certain passes. And, I started looking at it again. He's got bad throwing mechanics, to be quite frank about it. I think he has a strong arm, and he's always relied on that arm, and he throws a lot of passes off of his back foot, almost the equivalent of a fall-away jumper in basketball, you know. And it's all arm motion. And I've listened to enough experts call games over the years, including former quarterbacks as color commentators, say that that is the number one thing that causes high throws is when yes. guys are throwing off of the back foot.
Yes.
And he does it constantly. And now look, the deep pass to Harris yesterday resulted in a touchdown. He threw the same way. So he can fling it a long way, throwing it that same way. But it's like, I think his mechanics are just, you know, he doesn't have good mechanics by the standard, you know. Quarterback coaches, I'm sure, cringe every time they watch him throw the ball, but it works out for him a lot of the time, you know, obviously. But
well, the irony in it is that, like, is the fact that the Saints have gone from a short passing team with no deep ball to, I mean, I hate being a biased follower of the team, but I watch a lot of NFL football, and I would not feel like I'm going too far on a limb and saying so far I have not seen anybody else throw as many beautiful long balls that are right on the money, in stride, perfectly thrown, but at the same time struggles to hit the short and intermediate passes. Wesley, I mean, maybe if we got a little bit, because, you know, we've had issues with the offensive line. I mean, does that improve, you know, when he can feel comfortable and confident stepping up in the pocket to be more accurate with his intermediate throws and get that percentage that's hovering around 60% up to the 65, 68, 70%, which I don't ever expect, but let's just say 65% where he should be.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I think that none of the current receivers on our team, their skill set is not going to be slants and things like that that are going to get open on those short routes, which we're not going to call Michael Thomas slant boy or anything like that, but he is very good at that route. Traquan Smith is good at those shorter routes too. And Traquan Smith also has the deep ball kind of speed that he's always had. I don't know if we're giving him the team that he needs right now to be good at those shorter passes. It was nice this past week to see them go to the screen a little bit and open that up with AK. They've got to keep him involved in the passing game. So I think that it's going to open up a lot having Traquan and Michael Thomas back. And we're all going to – the NFL's completely forgot it, and I think even us as Saints fans are forgetting it. But a year and a half ago, Michael Thomas was the offensive player of the year for the entire NFL. This is a guy that he comes back healthy, makes a huge impact on your team and what he's able to do. And then less – even easier to forget is his rookie year and his second year when Breeze still had the ability to get the ball 40 yards downfield, Michael Thomas was catching 35 and 40-yard passes down the field too. Like he can do anything.
He might not be a burner, but he was not just a guy, a loping kind of guy that could only catch 10-yard passes.
A great, great route runner to get going.
Right.
And also, too, it's kind of funny. This is a game, if you showed me the 50% completion percentage, 15 of 30, even with the touchdowns, if I would have read the stats in the preseason, I'd be like, this is a game that would be pulling my hair out, going, why did we have 15 incompletions? Instead, this was a fun game to watch. Like, I hate that it goes back to 15 of 30, but like this, the deep ball that he can throw, and when it does set his feet and fire the ball, it's really exciting to watch the ball go downfield because we haven't seen it in a long time.
Well, I've now gotten to the point where my confidence level, it used to be, and again, now it sounds like we're picking on Breeze, but when he dropped back and launched the ball, just like Heath, how many times do we have the conversation where I'm like, when Breeze breaks the pocket, like outside of the pocket, gets, you know, pressure and then gets, nothing good ever happens, right?
No.
But when Jameis throws the deep ball and he launches it, when the ball's traveling and the camera's watching it, I fully expect somebody to be open and running right under it now. Now, it's not fair, but that's how it feels, right? So the confidence is there.
It's working out that way a little bit, though. I mean, it used to be like when the opposing team's offense threw a ball deep down the right side of the field.
Right.
You're like, no.
You were just hoping not to see a wide open receiver running down with
a flag.
Or a Saints cornerback chasing him, right? Heath.
Yeah, I think the air that he gets on the ball in those deep throws is part of the reason that he's having so much success. Unfortunately, he's getting that same air on the short throws.
Right.
When they go longer, they got time to come down. When he's throwing the shorter ones, they haven't quite had the time to come down yet. But he'll get better. Like I said, the key things, he's not making the dumb mistakes that people at least are attributing to being
that's him the key. That's the key,
Tampa, right? Whether it's fair or not is a whole nother – right. I'd have to go back and watch every game and every snap and all that he played. But that's been the narrative. But at least so far here, he's not doing it. He throws the ball away when there's nothing. The worst play – well, I know it's hard to say considering he threw an interception, but that may have been more effective being stepped on or hit in the side as he was throwing. But, boy, that play where he kind of went – he moved up through the traffic – and had open field in front of him and only needed yards for the first down. And then he threw that really horrible pass towards Hogan. And Sean Payton was lighting him up on the sideline. And they talked about it during the game or whatever. That was like the worst play to me that I think that he made in the game. You know?
Well, this isn't in his defense. It wouldn't have worked anyway because it was a holding call on that. But that was probably the closest thing to like, what are you doing? Yeah. You know, but I will say that we mentioned it last week, and I guess I'm looking at this Jameis talk. Is this, I mean, look, it's just going to be every week. It's going to be a segment. It's like, where are we at with Jameis? How did Jameis do? And unfortunately, he's under a microscope. So now we're doing a segment where did he have any Jameis plays, any, you know, the plays that Jameis used to do in Tampa Bay? And we're like, oh, we haven't seen any Jameis plays. And so it's also unfair. I was watching the Monday night game and I see Jameis plays. I got to quit doing that. I get so mad when other people do that and they make it, what do you guys do? Classic Dave, you know, classic Wesley, you know, it like considering it the plays that Jameis does all the time, it just out of habit or whatever. like he's playing clean football. There will be interceptions. There will be fumbles, and it's going to be some Drew Brees that everybody does it. He's under a little bit more of a microscope, but I would like to say this and get your thoughts on it. If you truly consider, because I mean, I hear people talk about and they're breaking it down to little things. He's got to do this better. He's got to do that better. He is working with one offensive lineman that is essentially a guy that you'd say, yeah, man, he's so the offensive line, no skill players, no tight ends, and Kamara, which is a whole nother issue about how much of a workload he's getting. And look at what he has overcome. Now, will he all of a sudden? I mean, because listen, that don't mean anything, but I just want to give him a big pat on the back for having the statistics he's had in the conditions. Because people are like, oh, Drew Brees, Coach Peyton don't trust him. I mean, have you thought for a minute that Peyton's trying to keep him from getting killed by an offensive line that's struggling, no receivers to bail him out, that he's like playing a control game? It has nothing to do with his confidence in Winston. And I'm not saying it is or isn't, but what I'm saying is, what he has done with so little talent, to me, deserves a huge pat on the back. Now, let's hope when the rest of the players come back, you know, especially the receivers, that all of a sudden maybe he don't start being more cavalier and throwing the ball all over the yard and not more concerned about throwing it away. Because I could see that being an issue, too. You got all these receivers, so let's just chunk it wherever and hope the receiver gets it. But he needs a big pat on the back, and I know I talked quite a bit. Wesley, some thoughts on it.
I mean, just simply, we're on pace for 10 or 11 wins with this team, not with our starters coming back. With this team right now, we're on pace for 10 or 11 wins. Jameis is on pace for 41 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. If both of those things happen, Sean Payton should be coach of the year and Jameis should be comeback player of the year, without a doubt. Like, and it shouldn't even be close. I can't imagine who would be even in the talk with him. So, I mean, those are big things. And like you're talking about, one offensive player, one offensive lineman playing in position. We got Troutman, who is a receiving tight end, trying to be a blocking tight end and getting ran over by linebackers on defensive ends because that's not his job. I mean, we signed Vanette to a pretty decent contract in the offseason. He was supposed to be our blocking tight end, who we have always really used the blocking tight end. I mean, that's, people have made a career out of being blocking tight ends in New Orleans that are longer right. than receiving tight ends in New Orleans. Everything he can seems like that he could control has worked out. And I'll tell you right now, I think for a couple of years, Patrick Mahomes has thrown just as many Jameis Winston type plays as Jameis Winston has. Patrick Mahomes has had Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce bailing him out on all kinds of just throws that you watch the mechanics and you watch the decision-making. You're like, oh, that was a bad decision. Don't do that. And then those guys catch the ball, so nobody gets mad at them. And I think we just talked the other day about the famous interception, fumble, touchdown against the Redskins. They were the Redskins back then. that Brees threw. Brees threw one of the worst interceptions that you'll ever see when he was scrambling around. But luckily, Henderson came back and, you know, strip the ball from the intercepting player, Meacham. I mean, took the ball. I mean, we've watched all those plays happen, and Jameis has not been that same Jameis. I don't know what he would have to do. He would have to have the worst next few 10 games in history to match what people were worried he might be.
Right. So it's pretty obvious he isn't what our worst fears may have been.
But
listen, we say this, and now we're like, talking to ourselves, each other, like we didn't understand that. He had one year where he had an awful ratio. The rest, I'm not saying he was great then, but he wasn't as bad as that one year. Heath, working with what he's working, do you think that, again, I'm not saying, and actually I would be disappointed if anyone's, oh, let's sign him up for, you know, 3 years. But I mean, he's working with nothing right now, and he's excelling. He's protecting the ball. And quite frankly, it's impressive.
No, I agree. I do not have any real quarrel with Jameis Winston right now. I still feel good about what he's doing. I think he will get better. And I think he will get better, and the team will get better. He's going to have more to work with, just like you've been saying. I mean, you missing Michael Thomas. You know, Tre'Quan Smith contributes in a different kind of way, maybe. In other words, he will draw more attention than some of the guys we have on the field now, even if he's not catching. He also will block well downfield that will turn into longer plays. So in a different kind of way, I'm not saying when Traquan comes back, all of a sudden he's going
to catch
80 balls or whatever. But the point is that, and while we're mentioning it, shout out to Troutman for showing up yesterday. He had a couple of nice catches. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we see a lot more because that's what he's really capable of doing. But the way it's going right now and what I expect to continue for the rest of the season, I would say, as it is right now, of course, it's always going to depend on money,
how
unrealistic or whatever he might be. But I think there's a good shot that Jameis Winston's going to sign another contract to stay on here to be the quarterback of the future.
Because from what I'm seeing, it looks like he's improving every week.
Yeah, so it's trending that way to me. Nothing right now tells me, this guy's done and it's just never going to work out.
So one of the opposite. One of the things, like you mentioned, because people have suggested, matter of fact, I think Craig suggested that just because those guys are coming back, and particularly Thomas and Smith, doesn't mean that they're going to be immediately just right back to the level they were pre-injury. Having said that, I always feel like I have to define what I'm saying because with Callaway, I was like, I got to see it. He's proven to be a good receiver. He is not a number one. I don't think he's necessarily a number two, but if you have Thomas and Smith on the field, he's not going to be drawing coverage and he's going to be covered by a third corner. I think that's when you'll start seeing him be very productive and everybody's gonna be like, oh, he's number one. He came alive. Well, no, he came alive because the other guys took that pressure off of him, but he's still a very good receiver, just with a limited skill set that wouldn't allow him to be a number one. But when you look at what Harris has done, you put Smith and Thomas on the field, those guys, all of a sudden, it's like, how do you cover them? Because, Thomas might not be the regular Thomas for a few weeks, but I think that teams still have to respect him when he steps on the field.
A guy like Thomas is going to get back to being Thomas quicker than a lot of other guys. I mean, he's been around a while. He's a pro.
Competitive.
He's good at what he does. It's not like it's going to come out there and take him weeks to get back into the assuming his leg is right and everything.
Right.
It's not a physical limitation.
So I'm going to talk about the workload that has been put on Kamara. And in the meantime, share some thoughts with, maybe I'm not going to say any names, but sometimes I can hear even professional football players or ex-professional football players share their thoughts and realize that they might know football, but sometimes they say the dumbest things. So Kamara has this high workload, and the prevailing thought from this person that irritated me is, hey, if he wants to be the man, he's going to have those 25, 30 carries. And he says, we compare him to the kid in Carolina,
McCaffrey,
and McCaffrey, he carried the team. He has all these carries. Well, I mean, he's hurt the last couple of weeks, but he's carried the load. And I'm just like, how dumb is that comment from an ex-professional football player? When the point of it is, so maybe he did carry. Man, he showed he could be durable for 2 or even 3 years, carrying 340 times a year. And he's been injured most of the last 2 years. That's the point. I don't necessarily think Kamara's going to get hurt on a 26 carry. But when you have 25, 26, 28 carries and a 3 or 4 receptions a game, by week 15, you have nothing left in the tank. Now, there are some exceptions to the rule. We're all going up to Nashville to watch one of them. Well, we're watching the Saints, but he'll be on the field, Derrick Henry. But Kamara's not built that way. And even if he's one of the toughest guys you've ever met, at some point you just can't take that pounding. And in order to keep him healthy and ready for a potential playoff push, the Saints need to find somebody else to take some of these carries off of him. But the problem is, who else are you going to say? Because that's how teams do, right? You may not realize it in fantasy and all this other stuff, but Kamara, I feel like he could really be the key in this game. So you give him a big workload. But Michael Thomas only gets 3. Next week, Michael Thomas gets the big workload. There's nobody else at least there hasn't been for the first five games, to take a load off of Kamara.
Yeah, and you know, to be fair with like where that guy was talking about is Kamara's attempts this year. So he, five games into the season, he's got 94 carries. The other 5 years or 4 years of his career, he's had for the entire season 120, 194, 171, and 187. So he's on pace halfway. I mean, he's halfway there, only five games into the season to eclipse any other number he's ever done. Now he is having less receptions than he's ever had in his career so far. But again, that's because he's being the running back and they're, you know, there's a, he's having to be in there picking up blitzes because we don't have anybody else that can do what he's doing.
All those things matter.
And again, yeah. Kamara did not earn, he already earned his contract. He did not earn his contract getting 30 carries a game. That's not why he got paid the way he did in New Orleans. He got paid for his versatility and the things he can do. And it would be just really dumb to, on his rookie contract, preserve him and keep him healthy, and then go, hey, now that we're committed to paying you $12 million a year, now we're going to get your ass kicked.
Right.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. If anything, you do it the other way, keep him healthier than normal, knowing that there's games at the end of the year and then the playoffs. That's, you got to have him for that. You can't wear his ass out. It's terrible.
And Heath, listen, he has proven that he's a tough guy. And he can run between the tackles. I mean, these first five games have proven that, listen, we're going to run you inside, outside. Recently, we've thrown the ball to him a few times. But he's played the role of your stereotypical between the tackles back, and he's done very well at it. Having said that, I mean, is this the course that we want to take? And two, you can add to that is who takes the pressure off of him? What are we going to do?
Yeah, well, that's what Tony Jones Jr. was there for, and of course he got hurt. And I do think he's capable to. Of course, you know, we could go back and say that's probably why we shouldn't have let Murray go. well, I mean, you know, but you're right about Kamara. No, I don't have a problem with running in between the tackles occasionally. You don't want him doing that, like you said, 20, 25, 30 times a game. Or I don't want him carrying the ball at all that many times a game. And I don't think the Saints do either. You know, now you want him to get a certain number of touches, but a lot of those are going to be receptions because, you know, that's getting the ball out in space on either on a screen or on a short pass or whatever, or hell, even a long pass occasionally. Now he had Jameis threw him a pretty pass Sunday. And of course, unfortunately he wasn't able to come up with it, but
he really always, did. I mean, not, he's always catching that ball too. He's caught that ball a bunch and that was just,
you know, and happens. But anyway, look, the point is that, you know, that is a dumb comment because both Kamara and McCaffrey have had injury issues. So they're not exactly carrying the load when it comes to carrying that kind of workload, and they won't be in a league for long if they continue to try to do that sort of thing. And you know, Derrick Henry is not going to have a long career running the ball like he does every year. He's going to be lucky to get 7 or 8 year career at the tops if he's lucky.
Right.
Carrying the ball that way. And so, you know, there is guys that have a high workload that can get paid a lot of money, you know, the bell cow kind of guys. But then you got a guy like Kamara. The reason he's getting paid is because he has a high percentage, a lot of productivity in a less amount of work. You know what I'm saying? In other words, this guy carried the ball 350 times this season and had three touchdowns. And Kamara touched it less than half of that time and had 20 touchdowns last season or whatever with 21. You know, that's what he's getting paid for, right? And his elusiveness and you know, and to make the electric plays and that sort of thing.
And I hate when people use decoy. But having his presence on the field, just like I mentioned Thomas may not be up to 100% in sync with Winston, but his presence will draw coverage. So does Kamara. So if you have other people you can go to, having Kamara in the backfield, teams still have to say, okay, we got to be able to cover this. We got to have attention here. And you can't spread your attention that thin. So he has value not being on, not getting the ball. Having said that, you have to have somebody else you can get the ball to that can still be productive. And unfortunately, when Tony Jones Jr. went down, you know, I just don't know who else can really.
I know y'all are wondering, but Latavius Murray has 91 more yards rushing than Tony Jones Jr. this year.
Yeah. Well, okay. Tony Jones Jr. hasn't early, at least in the season before he got hurt, he still wasn't getting a lot of attempts. And I right. think that's just a trust thing where, you know, we go back to, golly, man, it's a close game. We really haven't been in, well, I don't know. I take that Packers game was a blowout, but in any of the other games, are you like, let's pull our best player out, our only real true playmaker, and put in this kid who we
he's got a lot more attempts. I'm just being.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you bringing that up. So speaking of getting injured, Taysom Hill goes down on Sunday. And man, I tell you, let me start off prefaces by saying that I do not like the college rule where if you tackle a guy and you hit him in the head, they kick you out of the game. It's dumb. It's just dumb. I do agree with trying to avoid the just taking a dude's head off for no real reason or whatever. And it's a catch 22, you know, a guy's going up the seam. You're a safety. You have no choice but to tackle him. And you're going to more than likely hit him in the head when he ducks or whatever. All that stuff goes into account. But what I saw on Sunday was a guy who went straight after Taysom's head. Is there a rule? I thought that there was a rule that they implemented that if they thought it was a blatant, you know, like going for a guy's head, that they could kick you out of the game. Is that right? Or am I just thinking or conflating college and pro?
Well, as in the pros, there's the, I think if you get two unsportsmanlike penalties or more, they can, I don't know that there's any singular play like that where they can, where they throw you out in the pro game.
I believe you. I mean, it's throwing a punch, but not for like even the most aggressive.
Not between the whistle.
I don't believe so.
Yeah. And anyway, I just thought that was just, again, that one and the time when that kid got from Dallas that got cut, Jalen Smith, is it? That literally launched himself into the side of Kamara's head. Those two were the, to me, most egregious, dirty plays where their only intent was just to hurt somebody. And there should be a penalty when they look at it, meaning kind of the opposite of college. It's like college, we're tossing you, but let's check the film. And if we see that maybe, or not maybe, but probably you weren't trying to hurt anybody, then we'll let you stay. In the pros, they should look at it and say, man, there was zero reason for you to not only continue the action that you did, but the way you launched yourself, use the crown of your helmet, hit him right in the head. You got to go.
Unfortunately, the way they're doing it in the NFL is by the fine that he will receive this week for that play when they go back and look at it.
Yeah,
I just don't know how effective that is for guys that make the kind of – the fines don't add up ratio-wise to the amount of money that these guys are making. They're literally,
Right. Doesn't mean anything.
Hardly a slap on the wrist. It's like fining Apple a few $100,000 or something. Or, you know, it's a joke. I mean,
this is also a good one that, I mean, going into the bye, because that looks like one of those concussions where you're not playing the next week. That looks like one of those concussions where you miss the next game. So having the bye week, I think, gives him the probability of being back when we come out.
So I'm going to go back to the conversation I was having about how much Jamin is doing with so little. And if you consider that for the majority, now he got his big plays out of Harris early, but you also took Harris and Taysom out of the game.
Yeah.
And still managed. I mean, at one point there, I thought the Saints were just going to, but they just kept coming up with, I guess I need to finish that thought, that they were going to find a way to let this slip away, but they kept grinding. They kept grinding. You could tell, at least I felt like you could tell the lack of depth, which I think is part of the problem for, you know, our pass rush issues right now, is that just later in the game, man, you just don't have enough depth to keep these guys fresh. And you can see it that we weren't stopping the run. And God, it was just getting to the point. I'm like, boy, how are we going to stop these guys? The time of possession was ridiculous. I think, what was it?
It was 36 to 23. Yeah.
23 minutes of time of possession. So I saw it slipping away, but it was God's plan. It was God's plan that the Saints would win that game. And it was also, now I didn't get this firsthand, but apparently God's plan to just get a punt over 50 yards that goes out of bounds at the two, hold them where they have to punt it back to you, and then throw the ball to a wide open Callaway. That was God's plan.
Our punter scored, well, what would have been 14 points if we could make extra points. Our punter scored two touchdowns for us in that game, basically. I mean, with three punts that went out at the 1, 2, and 3 yard line, or two went out of bounds and one got downed. Listen, I thought Thomas Morstead was one of the greatest punters in the history of the NFL. I don't know if I remember looking back on a game that was that dominant.
Right,
I mean, I've seen him put a few inside the 10 and right at the 11 and done that a whole bunch to control field position. But that was,
well, quite ridiculous. Frankly, I don't remember. I mean, I didn't know that they still, I remember when it occurred to me that, like, yeah, they don't punt it out of bounds no more. Right. Remember the old coffin corner? That's what they called it.
The thing.
They didn't do it. They don't really do it anymore. They kind of force you by punting it like on the five to catch it on the five. So yeah. He must be old school, man, because that's two coffin corners.
And I think the big deal of why they were able to stop doing that, Dave, is because there's so many rules now against blocking the gunners. So the gunners can get down there to the middle of the field, and you're much safer kicking to the middle of the field and then be able to gun it. You could basically kill the gunner as he was trying to get down the field. So that's why they did coffin corners. Man, this kicker makes it easy, though. The gunners can just stay at the line of scrimmage and yeah. let him
yeah,
kick.
I mean, yeah. keep going. Go ahead, Heath.
How's this for a stat line? He punted the ball five times.
Oh.
Three of those were downed inside the five, much less inside the 20. Okay? And out of all five, he averaged 53.6 yards per punt.
That's really
he could have averaged more if he had been further back.
Yeah, right.
I mean, yeah. He had a long of 60, had a 60-yard punt.
Yeah, and the only thing that brought that average back down a little bit is the one that he had to kick out of his own end zone actually wasn't that great of a kick because he was short on the distance of how far behind the line of scrimmage he was. But, yeah, I mean, that's got to be one of the most dominant punting performances in an NFL game, ever.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with it. Not that I really pay that close attention to punters, but – Yeah, it sounds good, man.
Wesley said, we saw quite a few good ones from Thomas Morstead. But
absolutely. So the Saints in the red zone. I guess we could have talked about this when we were talking about Jameis Winston, but 13 for 15, 105 yards, 9 touchdowns, and a 135.4 quarterback rating. That's insane, Heath. Could you do better is what I want to know. If the Saints had to call you up.
I only had one season where I did better than that, but generally speaking, consistent. That's excellent, man. I mean, okay. And now let's look at this. Okay. So we're talking about Jameis Winston. You can sit here and argue all the other things, but where's the real money? The money is in the red zone, right? And look at what the team is doing in the red zone. So what else, at this point I could say, what else do you really need to know?
And
that's
I'll make up some stat that I remembered reading in the offseason, but when everybody was talking about how many interceptions he's thrown, there was a stat that was talking about that since his career, he was one of the two or three best red zone quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
He's always been – he produces touchdowns in the red zone. It was the – when he was backed up and pressured is where he had problems with the interceptions. I think he threw more pick sixes too, but – I mean, in the red zone, he's always been a great quarterback. So if we can, and again, I think that we know as the Saints, we had problems the last few years of kicking really short field goals or getting stuck at fourth and one, or fourth and goal inside the five. And so if we can turn around at the number 13 of 15, Dave, I mean, that's just.
No, it's insane. And I just want to reiterate what you were saying for the folks listening. This isn't new. Going into the stats people were hanging on to convince themselves and convince others that Jameis Winston really is a lot better. And it was just Tampa Bay and all the coaching and blah, it was that he had, if it wasn't the highest above Drew Brees, Brady, he was a great red zone quarterback and he's done nothing but reinforce that. And I wonder at some point you could just say, well, a couple of times things went your way and the guy got open and, cause I heard somebody criticize his shorter touchdown. Who caught the shorter touchdown and he was wide open that Jameis threw that. Oh, it was a busted cover. Like that happens every week. Busted coverage is a part of the NFL. If you cannot bust the coverage, then you got your defense communicating really well. Yeah. But so to act like those touchdowns don't count is no different from,
I'd flip it around because you want your quarterback to recognize it and take advantage of it.
Absolutely. And, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, I know you read the stats, they've 13 to 15 and all that 9 touchdowns. That is best in the NFL. For the 135 quarterback rating. I don't know if you said that at the end. Best in the NFL this year.
I didn't say that because I didn't know it was the best. I just knew it was incredible. I mean, I don't know how much better you can get than that. But Yeah. So yeah, that's good quantifier there. I don't know, man. I have a bunch of little notes here, this and that, but is there anything else that you guys feel like needs some attention, some discussion?
I want to mention Pete Werner. This guy had 13 tackles. This is a guy who did not play in the preseason. Remember, he was in the offseason, looked like he was going to be, we heard he was great from training camp, and then got hurt, did not play in any preseason game, lost his job to Bond, because Bond had one of the better preseason games I've ever seen nobody linebacker incredible. Have. And then as he recovered from injury, I mean, comes back in, plays great last week, and then was our best defender besides Lattimore this past week. I mean, he was everywhere. And this guy's not just being one of those athletic linebackers that's stopping the run and making tackles that way. He is defending people that are running slants and running outs and going after the running back and the tight ends. He's all over the place. I'm really impressed with this guy. And I mean, we heard all these great things about like how his floor was high, but his ceiling was probably low. I don't know if that's true anymore. This guy could have a super high ceiling 2 games into his career, when most linebackers we have seen, linebackers take a while to develop and don't really do well in our complicated defensive system. This guy looks like a great draft pick again. By the same.
I think most of the people who were criticizing Warner and saying those things, I don't really recall a bunch of professionals saying this, but I feel like every time they said it, they backed it with false information. There was, I remember he ran a 4.58, and everybody was saying he ran a 4.65, and that he was, you know, even me, I was in on the discussion, like he looks small, but the guy at the combine, impartial people, nobody's over there like, oh, it's Ohio State's pro day, he weighed 240. Not, I mean, this is impartial people, 238 at the, but I think he wears those, you know, I guess those stripes to keep your elbows and forearms from getting scraped up when you slide. Mm-hmm. I'm serious. Kamara wears them. And he wears them, and it just makes his arms look skinny, because like the white on white, it makes you know,
and that's also just the color of his arm too.
Yeah it just blends in, you can't tell. And then in addition,
the number
to that,
20 wearing the safety number 20, yeah, makes that helps. Skinnier too.
Then yeah, doesn't look like a linebacker. He wears tampons for shoulder pads. And I mean the guy looks small, but he's
6'3 240 242 is what they've got him listed at. Like, I mean, he's not a little guy at all.
No. And I'll also say, when you put him against other linebackers on our team, that he, you know, he doesn't look as big as, but you know, I mean, some people carry their weight in different ways. Like some people, it's in their it's in their upper body and their chest, somewhere in their butt and legs. And I don't know where he keeps it, but he, you know, he's not a little guy, even though he looks like it. And he's doing everything he can to make himself look smaller, kind of like a woman. Yeah. My wife does that, you know, it's always wearing it anyway. So
first time I saw him, I was like, the Saints have a safety lining up at linebacker. I was like, there's a safety standing next to DeMario Davis. The first time I saw him, and we hadn't seen him. And so when I saw 20 and I actually thought he was Heath, the other safety. That's why I was confused. I saw number 20, and he looks slender. You know, he doesn't look like DeMario Davis, for instance. DeMario Davis is thick and looks like
When he stands next to DeMario, that doesn't help. And actually, they're supposedly the same weight. You know how that works. DeMario comes in his rookie year, and whatever his weight is, that's what it stays for his 12-year career. And so he's probably like 255.
Yeah.
Where Warner might be 238, but it's like, man, that ain't the same thing.
The good news with Davis, though, is that extra 25 pounds is all muscle.
And you can see his arms.
We'll get Werner on that NFL diet. He'll be bulking up.
Let's see. So what was it? I had something else I want to throw in there. But anyway, Heath, anything else that needs a little conversation that we haven't discussed yet?
Well, we touched on a little bit with Lattimore. You know, I think this game, Lattimore has one of these games, or I don't want to say he has one every once in a while, but he has certain games where he just looks. And I think, you know, we've always said it before, it's he kind of gets bored when he's not guarding necessarily anybody great. And he always has these big games against the Mike Evanses and all of these guys. Well, this past weekend, he was up against his buddy, his former teammate at Ohio State. And early on, the guy McLaurin got the best of him a few times. He made a few catches, but then as the game wore on, And I don't know why they kept going back, why they chose to keep going back at Lattimore. I guess just because they wanted to try to get it in McLaurin's hands.
And maybe they got false confidence by them early, the early success.
I guess so, you know, because we didn't hardly – the only time we heard of Debo in the entire game is when he made the interception.
Right.
It was like they didn't go over there at all. It seemed like every passing play had Lattimore involved in it, and most of them were failures for him. But, you know, that was just – my impression of it was, man, he's really into this game because this is his former teammate, and they made so much out of this match. Of course, I know he couldn't hear the announcers, but it was just – it was good to see him. You know, he's really having a good year on top of all of it. I mean, he's back to that guy that, you know, that rookie year, you know, the Lattimore Island, that whole thing. I mean, he's really playing well right now. So
to me, probably – not probably. I think that is the single best game, and it might just be because there were some individual incredible plays. One of them was – it was an out route. And is it McClellan?
McLaurin.
I mean, he caught the ball, and it was going to be a big first down. And Lattimore comes out of nowhere. Well, I guess he didn't come, you know, comes from behind and pushes him in the back just before he could get that second foot down. And me describing it does it no justice. I mean, Lattimore was shot out of a cannon. It should have been a first down. And when I saw the replay, I was expecting it to be, they'll overturn it. It's going to be a first down. And it wasn't. It was just an incredible play. To me, his best game.
And it's, I think that I'll really stand on this. I think McLaurin's probably the most underrated rated wide receiver in football. Like, you can go back and look at his numbers over the last few years with nobody that should be playing quarterback in the NFL as his quarterback. And he's put up great numbers. And then we watch him, he's running great routes and getting open. Just Lattimore is perfect coverage. And let's also remember, if Lattimore wasn't wearing a thumb brace,
yes,
he would have had two interceptions in this game and one last week. So, he'd be having a whole different type of season. And we have no reason to believe that it's not one of those. Lattimore's always caught the ball when he gets his hands on it. So I believe he actually catches both of those. And then you're talking about, getting defensive player of the week with the way that he shut down McLaurin and getting two interceptions. This is great to see from him, because I think we were all – as Saints fan, with some of the stuff he's done and the way he's been there for some games and not been there for others, worried about paying him. And I know we talked about this at the start of the show, Dave, worried about paying him. And then does he ever have a decent game ever again?
Right. He could have been that player. At least that's how it felt.
And it seems like this is probably looks like, even with the stuff that happened in the offseason, maybe some stuff has straightened him out. Maybe he's getting some better advice, and there's always a good time to mature. And I guarantee you the Saints didn't just go give him this contract, because I guarantee you those very serious conversations, and they saw the way he was in the preseason, and probably there's a lot more that we'll never know that went into the maturity he's probably made in the last year. And it's coming through in the on the field, which is great to watch.
Absolutely, man. Oh, and the thing that I wanted to say that I couldn't remember, I got to give a shout out to Tomas, because I made a comment about Werner. And Tomas said, I think he's playing great. And I said, he had two. And going back and watching that game, I thought he had two plays early. And after rewatching it, I realized neither one of them wasn't even him. And the other one wasn't his responsibility. So now I just want to give Tomas, I even admitted I was wrong, because me and Tomas will get into that stuff sometimes. But I give Tomas a shout out that he was right. And Werner has been playing great. And even then I told him, I said, well, you know, he's playing better because they were taking advantage of him a little earlier, and come to find out it wasn't really. So anyway, I think that's all the show that we have for you guys this week. And we want to thank you guys. Hey, I think I could almost pull off the Dome Patrol exit right there. It was coming to me. We want to thank you loyal listeners every week. I don't have nothing. Look, no, nothing. Just my notes. For downloading
and
listening.
What are all those Twitter handles? Well, that's, Dave,
give me a chance, man. We want to thank all our loyal listeners for downloading the show every week. And you can find all the shows where you download them all at one time, and you do all that stuff and things, and you can listen to it when you want to. It's a podcast thing. It's amazing. You ought to try. But I didn't print that up because I was in a hurry today, but I'm going to do it next week. So for Heath Elson-San and Wesley Coleman, I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast, and we will talk to you next week. We're going to talk to you next week, even though it's a bye week. And you know how we like our vacation days. but apparently it was a federal holiday like Columbus Day, and then they changed it to a not a federal holiday, so we got to work.
Everybody's practicing next Monday. We got to talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. All right, we'll talk to y'all next week.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back. And that's the way it is.
No, yeah, Natural Man Billy Rabbit's here.
And Bulk Rogan, brother.
Here with the DHD Mania. With the BS and Beer Podcast.
Weekly.
Gotta love that podcast.
Every week with your host, Dave, Heath, and Tomas. With all that juicy, juicy information.
All about the Saints news, stats, and school.
Not free for view.
So be there.
Or get it wobbled.